why I thought I would have a voice the week after Nsika to finish up recording this episode right away is, well, it was just foolish of me. And unfortunately, this year I not only came home from Nsika with the warm fuzzies of so many hugs from fellow makers and potters, I also came home with the warmth of a fever. And the sneaky bug that seemed to weave its way through Nsika along with all of those much, much needed hugs. And while yes, that viral nastiness is part of what contributed to my having a much slower week than anticipated last week after returning home from Richmond, I noticed there was also something else lurking under that fever. Something that I actually experienced last year as well, even though I didn't get sick last year. It's the adrenaline crash. You see, having 6,000 potters descend upon one city to be in one place at one time, all together talking all about pots and this crazy life of making a living from the things we make, well, it's amazing. It also only lasts for about 3 days. It's like a pottery sugar high. And I'm going to assume we've all experienced the crash after too much sugar. Or perhaps, depending on the phase of life that you're in currently, too much caffeine. I don't know about you, but after getting home from Nsika, I have this mixed experience of being both completely inspired to create and strangely also really exhausted. Or maybe inspirationally overwhelmed. I'm not just physically exhausted, because, yeah, sure, I spent too many days staying up too late and getting up too early, so sure, that tiredness makes sense. That's not exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a weird mental thing that I don't quite know how to describe. I can't quite put my finger on it. At least I can't for a day or two until I realize, yet again, ah, yes, of course. It's the crash. Capital C. Patent pending. I've just spent 3 days with people who get it. With people who are more than happy to spend all of lunch analyzing how someone was able to use their index finger to pull a lump of mud in a completely different way than I'd ever been able to before. And how the heck did they actually do that? And oh my gosh, did you see that? I can't wait to get home and try it. It's obviously not your normal lunch out with friends. At least perhaps not all of our friends, I'm guessing. Nsika is a few days where us artists, who perhaps are not always the majority of a group of people in any given room for the way in which we choose to go about life, well, Nsika is a time where the room is full of us. In a world full of friends who maybe don't understand why I'd rather skip going to see the Barbie movie in favor of sticking my hands in mud. At Nsika, I don't have to explain myself for that, because everybody also wants to go put their hands in mud. And when those days come to an end, there's a crash back to reality. A crash into the potentially less than exciting minutiae of our everyday lives. The laundry and the dishes and the gap between what I dream of spending my time doing versus where I'm at right now. So why am I spending so much time starting out a podcast episode on such a less than exciting point? Well, because today's episode, I'm chatting with Connie Cole, who is one of the founding members inside of our community, and someone who actually did not attend Nsika. While in-person hugs will always be amazing, when they aren't available anymore, virtual hugs from an equally supportive group of fellow makers who get why learning a new polling technique is so freaking exciting, well, those virtual hugs sustain me, in no small part because we get to make these connections with each other every single day inside of the community. No matter our time zones, no matter where we are in the world. Yes, of course, there is always something special about coming together in person, as was witnessed by our community members who got together for pizza night on Friday of Nzika. But the intense highs of being together, followed by the low crash of having to leave, frankly, that roller coaster ride doesn't exactly feel sustainable. As I think most of us know, lasting friendships and networks of support take work. They take commitment. And that's why I'm rambling along, because what comforts and excites me so stinking much in working through this post-Nzika crash is the support that is overflowing out of our community, a virtual home where makers can connect every single day. If you want to. Or, you know, you can connect once a week because maybe life is kind of crazy right now. That's totally up to you. You make it what you need. So, long story long, yes, this is still an interview about how the heck Connie Cole is making a living from the things she makes, per the usual of what you expect here on the podcast. So don't worry, it's not an entire sales pitch episode. But by nature of Connie being a founding member, you are going to hear us chatting about this virtual home, or neighborhood, as Connie calls it. And I just wanted you to know, in my post-Nzika haze of feeling both excited and exhausted, that this is the super cool and, more importantly, helpful role our virtual community has been playing in my life the last week or so. Sure, I have the admin password to the community, but I'm also participating just like any other member. I log into this online neighborhood to celebrate exciting moments, like sharing an image of just how many of you came to my talk on taking better photos faster at Nzika, which, if you were there and I didn't get a chance to tell you, thank you, because holy cow, there were a lot of you in that room. But I also log into the community on the hard days. The days when the adrenaline has crashed and, frankly, I don't feel like doing much of anything. It's inside of the community where I share if I'm finding myself stuck in a rut and where, without the fake, good vibes only kind of internet encouragement, instead I find friends who understand that rut, hear me out, but also won't let me dig the rut so deep that I can't get out. That's the kind of support we're talking about. Anyway, I'm back to rambling, so let's hear Connie's story, both of her journey in clay and how she found an online neighborhood in the community, right after a brief word from our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by the Rosenfield Collection of Functional Ceramic Art. The collection exists as an online source for research and inspiration, featuring photos of objects made by over 1,000 artists. The images are high quality and can be used with no permission required, making them a great source for students and teachers. To find out more, visit www.rosenfieldcollection.com. This episode is also sponsored by the Archie Bray Clay Business, home of Bray Patch, a ceramic patching material that is best used for filling cracks and bonding breaks. Bray Patch can be applied to either green or bisqueware and fired up to cone 10. It fires paper white, but can be tinted using your chosen clay body and be covered by opaque glazer slip. Order anytime, online, at archiebrayclay.com. Now, on with the show. Welcome to The Maker's Playbook, the show where we talk all about what it's really like to make a living from the things you make. I'm your host, seasoned entrepreneur of 14 years, Rebecca Ikis Cara. Hey, Connie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Rebecca. It's good to be here.
It's so surreal. We were saying before we hit record, this probably feels like the most comfortable interview, because even though we have never met in person, you're the person I feel like I know the best. Mm-hmm. Or the most, or whatever the right adjectives.
No, it's fun to be able to spend a time. I'm excited. I'm like, all right, we just get to chat for however long it goes.
Exactly. And we should have, I said, you know, I refrained from opening a bottle of wine, but it does feel very serendipitous that we scheduled this talk for today, because you and I know each other through the community. We'll attempt not to make the entire conversation about that for people's well-being. But as of yesterday, I don't know if you saw the post or not yet. As of yesterday, there's 100 people inside of there.
That's amazing. I'm so excited. Your little animated things were pretty great.
I took a note from Bill. I took a note from Bill on those avatar, those little emoji things.
Yeah, you nailed it. It's exciting seeing the community grow. Somebody had messaged asking about it. They were considering joining. And I explained to her, I said, it's like, we all have this love for clay. So I visualize it as us connected through like a clay street. And we all have little houses that touch the street. It's such an interesting group because we're from all over. We're so diverse around the world. And yet we connect in these common things that we struggle with and things that we enjoy and just kind of this love for clay. It's created, I was thinking about the friendships that have developed over the years, and it's so unique and it's exciting seeing it grow.
And for me, it's one of those things that, and then I'm going to actually make you introduce yourself, because this is like true community example. We're just going to go deep in like immediately, straight from the beginning. But it's also, I don't know if anybody else feels this way, but sometimes for us, it's kind of like we're the oddballs in a group of friends. Right? Like the way we're setting up our life is not the way most other people set up their life or the priorities or how we spend money or things like that. But you get in a virtual room or physical room full of another makers, full of other potters, and everyone's like, well, of course you're going to do that. That makes sense to me. You know, it's, you don't have to kind of explain yourself. Everyone's like, yeah. Obviously, you would spend a few thousand dollars on a new kiln before you would buy a new car or an electric bike or, you know, whatever other thing is like, who wants a Stanley Cup? What's a Stanley Cup? What are you talking about?
No, I think it's interesting hanging out with people who've committed to creativity. I see creativity as just assaulted on from the get-go. We watch little kids. I used to teach. Well, let's go back. My name is Connie Cole. My business is Two Cents Ceramics. So, yes. So that's me. We could talk about the name later. But I started out in clay working as an aide in an art department. And so I was kind of like the art police. So the teacher could teach and then I would help with her classroom management. But it was fascinating watching the littles, so the first graders, come through, draw their pictures. There wasn't a whole lot of stress. But the older you got, the kids would be harder and harder on themselves. And, oh, I can't draw, or I can't do this, or I'm not good. And it was like, the older we get, the smaller the box we put ourselves into, saying we can't or we're no good. And we go into this comparison game that just steals and robs us the ability to partner with creativity. And we miss out on so much. And so this group of now 100 people have committed to creativity, and it's fascinating that synergy. They're not critiquing each other. It's supportive, and yet we're all pressing through to fight for the right to create. It's kind of fun.
I feel like we have to make up a new, like, now I want to make that song into our version, because I just started singing Fight for the Right to Party in my head as you said. You said fight for the right, and immediately.
Oh, I know. I went there too, but I'm listening for you.
That is such a great point. And I think one of my concerns at the beginning was, how do you create a space virtually where people are supportive without being advicey? Mm-hmm. You know, that's not a real word, obviously, but there's a difference. And I think we've struck that balance. And I give all credit to all of you who came along from the very beginning and helped set that tone. I don't think I knew exactly how to do that yet. And I just got immensely lucky in the, you know, you've been there from the very beginning
and so many other people to help without being like, well, here's what you're supposed to do. Here's what you should do if you're not doing this. You know, there's not that tone in there, which I'm just so grateful for.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the biggest, one of the things that I see is that there's a membership fee. Mm. So when I was in the, you know, aid in the art department, and then we moved and I worked, found a ceramics studio here in Chattanooga and did kind of a work exchange. So I was able to continue with clay and I was grateful for that. But that lasted for a season. And then I was back to like me and my learning curve. And I joined a couple Facebook groups thinking, oh, this will help with asking questions or whatever. And oh my word, people were just rude. And I left because I started using the strong arm for centering because my hands were starting to give me trouble. And I'm like, here's the tool. I'm going to add it to what I do. And people jumped all over me about not being, you know, a real potter and blah, blah, blah. And like, what do we all need to go back to the kick wheel days? You know, this is you do you, I'll do me. We're working with clay. And so when you opened up the community, which to me was like the coolest call to take a podcast to the next level. Mm. Podcasts are really popular. Everybody's doing them. It's fascinating. And we get to listen in on a conversation, but then we leave and there's no call to conversation within ourselves, like amongst ourselves. And you've stepped up and said, I'm not going to just do a podcast. I'm going to create a place for the conversation to continue. And it's risky. It's vulnerable, but it's created this real space and there's a beauty to it, which I'm grateful for. So I found the community at a really good time for me. It was exactly what I needed. And I like to put into the community what I would like to get out of it.
You're a rock star. I'm going to force us to go into your story because I feel like everyone's going to be like, oh, this whole episode's only about it. But it's just, we can't help it. Once you get in there, like they'll get it once they're there. But it's interesting you brought up the podcast because part of the reason the community started, not just because I knew firsthand that without the support I had starting, I wouldn't have gotten out of year one, let alone year 10. So I knew that firsthand for myself and had experienced a virtual community with that support. But also, I found myself every time I ended a new episode and said, together, we've got this, I know that to be true. But I felt like I was only saying it rather than doing it, mm-hmm. right? Because I was saying that out loud, looking at a computer screen, as opposed to actually living that in a way, if that makes sense. You know, and as I kept getting these really beautiful one-on-one emails, it was kind of like, this conversation would be so fruitful to have. Like, why would only two people benefit from this email exchange, right? To open this up to a safe space would just be so fruitful. So that was really like saying that tagline over and over and over again was like, okay, this isn't enough. Like that, this isn't cutting it.
Mm-hmm. We need it. We need community. I think the assault on creativity is something we are all pushing against the current as we press forward as makers to continue making clay. Oh my word. It takes perseverance to choose to continue because it's hard. If you're looking in from the outside, people think, oh, it's so relaxing. It's hard. It's hard at every stage. Something terrible can happen. And yet, once we do it for the first time, over and over and over, it doesn't matter who you're talking to, somebody that plays with clay says, I was hooked. And that's the thing. It's like, clay represents so much. It's so deep. It's so meaningful. And we have to fight to protect that forward movement in creating with clay. And some of that happens in relationship. And this has been a really good example of using the interwebs, as you like to call it, for good, to connect not just with our literal neighbors around us, but with when we link arms with other creatives, we're making a positive change for good. And to support each other in that journey is beautiful and important.
Totally. Well, you mentioned Chattanooga, so I'm going to make us right turn back into your story here, because I had forgotten actually how many iterations for you. Like you mentioned before we hit record Ohio, and I was like, wait, Connie lived in Ohio? Like, so walk us back a little bit. I know, kind of walk us back timeline wise, however far back you want to go in terms of when you were teaching, when you shifted geography.
So we were living in the Dayton, Ohio area. Our kids were going to a private school, Christian school there, and they needed an aide in the art department. And we've got two daughters. They were both in high school at the time. And my husband has, he's always worked full time, carried the insurance, which we're grateful for.
I wasn't going to bring it up this whole conversation. I wasn't.
It's okay. And so what I, the way that I've contributed financially is, you know, I've helped pay all some other bills, and but I've always been kind of the stay-at-home mom, but work creatively to bring in income while still being really available for our kids. So I've done all kinds of like odd jobs, and I've cleaned houses, and I've baked bread and sold it, you know, like all the things. I think I'm an entrepreneur at heart. It's in my deep DNA blood. So I also don't like working for other people. So I work really well for myself, except this school job came open and I'm like, that sounds interesting to me. So I was hired to be the aide in the art department, and they had a full ceramics room. And I grew up on a farm. I love playing, like we used to play in the dirt, and love making stuff with my hands. So to have the opportunity to go learn how to throw when I had some free time was so cool. And so, yes, just like everybody else, I touched clay and I was hooked. And so I spent so much time in there. And then we ended up moving. And I was like, seriously?
I just found my stride.
Yeah, so we moved to the Chattanooga area. My husband took a job down here. It was a great move, with the exception of losing clay. We loved Ohio, but I love Tennessee now. And I thought that was kind of the end of my clay journey. And then through just some random events, I met a ceramicist down here. And we connected really well. And I ended up doing like a work exchange there. When I was working up in Ohio, I had learned a lot about classroom management, clay management, all their recycling, all of that.
I was going to say classroom aid actually is secret code for like studio wench. Like you had to do.
Yeah. I just tell people I was the art police.
Don't put that clay with that clay. Don't hold on. That goes over here.
It was so good to just learn from the beginning, really good studio practice. And then working down here in Chattanooga, I continued because I'm like a diehard for the underdog. So that bag of clay that had completely dried out, it was my job to bring it back to life. And it felt great. Like I learned so much, and I was able to enjoy that time as well while continuing to throw and keep practicing.
And then when did you, because I'm looking, nobody can see you now, but I have seen through our studio tours and our live hangouts and everything, this glorious home studio that you have now. So when did you kind of transition from work exchange into home studio? Or even, I know there's like a pivot in there with 2 cents, and I think it's more than one step. So I'm not completing that question clearly, because it's like there's multiple steps in the process, I'm sure. So Chattanooga was, when did you guys move? So let's timeline it first. When did you move from Ohio to Chattanooga, Tennessee? I also just love saying Chattanooga, just for the record. I'm going to fit it in.
Hey, it's fun to spell. That's a great question. 2017?
Okay. So it hasn't been that long.
No, it hasn't been that long.
In my mind, like, it just suits you so well. I don't know why, but it just feels like, oh, clearly Connie grew up in Tennessee. I mean, like, this is just you to me. This is what's fascinating. Okay.
I love Tennessee. So, okay, we'll say 2017. Yeah. So I was there down in the Chattanooga pottery studio for a couple years, and then she ended up closing. And my space up here, this basement was, it's a walkout basement. It's got 2 windows. It's great. And it was dark and dingy when we bought this house. I had no idea it was going to turn into this space, but we moved some of the equipment from her shop up here, so it didn't have to go and be in a storage unit. So the wheels and stuff like that came up here. And I started teaching. I started doing like mom's night out classes. And it was so much fun. So I did a Meet the Pottery Wheel class, and I would have like eight people at a time. And there is no better way to force yourself to put words to what your hands are learning than teaching. So it was a great thing timeline wise in my skill level, because I had been working on getting better and throwing better, and then to just teach, and then you're dealing with everybody else's pots. So that was up here, the basement, the studio space started to evolve, the walls got painted, you know, and it just, I think as my skills got better, my space grew with me. And so it's really fun, because now when people see it, they just think it's amazing. And it is, but it's also my space that grew with me. And so I always want to tell people, like, you don't have to have the perfect space. You just have to be present with where you're at and grow as your hands and your clay, like ability to move clay grows. Like, you don't have to. We always want to get like the perfect thing first and not be willing to work through the process. I would just say, let your space come along the ride of process.
Well, because how many things, like when you have to work through, when you have to troubleshoot something, I feel like it informs your, it can inform your style, right? It's like that notion of, if you have a completely blank canvas, you have no idea what to do. All of a sudden you put a little bit of constraints on it and someone can do something never even thought of before because they were forced to work in within constraints. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes a lot of sense. That feels like a very much the conversation we had from the graphic design perspective, because everyone else was always giving you the constraints and then you had to try and kind of like fulfill your creativity within those things. But I can't imagine, like, you know, given all the best resources of all of the things, well, what happens if one day something breaks and you've never had to figure out a workaround to something or be able to produce your work without a tool, maybe, you know, like there's a, I don't know. I think at least for me, so many of the ceramicists I meet that are older than I am, significantly, you're not that much older than me, significantly older than I am, seem to have this similar independent value that runs through them. Mm-hmm. And what I notice a lot of us coming up now is like, oh, I need this and I need this and I need this extra resource. And, you know, so many of the master potters I talk to now are like, I didn't start with any of that. Like, you just have to start in some ways. Right?
Yeah.
I'm rambling now.
No, it's true. And I think that's another way that we limit ourselves, is we look at what our neighbor has, or we look at, you know, our pottery person that we follow on Instagram, and we do this whole comparison. Well, if I want to get good, I have to have exactly what they have. The reality is they've put their time in, and we have to get back to being willing to just let our own journey with clay move at its pace of staying, keep showing up, put your own hands on your own clay, and stop looking at everybody else's work. Stop wishing, you know, your stuff looked like their stuff. Like, just be present. And I think that was one of the better things here, is just allowing, I don't know, there was a while I would just look at everybody else's Instagram pages and had a whole save section of stuff that I liked, you know, as you're coming up through. And then I found that ended up stunting my creativity. It stunted my joy in this process, because nobody makes lovely things in the beginning. You just make things. And that's okay, because we would never get to the lovely things without being willing to go through the things that are just mediocre. And it was really helpful to stop looking at everybody else's stuff. And that brought more of the joy back to just making.
So at what point, it's really fascinating to think about, you know, your Chattanooga studio starting mostly with teaching, because I think of you now mostly as a production potter.
Yes.
And those are two radically different things and two radically different uses of your time. Mm-hmm. So how did that kind of, because I think it's particularly interesting, because I think most people go the other direction, right? Most people start making and maybe, you know, it's a slog to also just pragmatically make enough money, be able to make fast enough to sell enough to make enough to pay the bills. And so it's totally normal for me to, I completely understand why teaching has continues to become so popular, because also Clay's so popular right now. There's so many people that just want to like take a one-off date night class, or, you know, if someone allows themselves to, it's very easy to get pulled into that because people will ask you. I mean, people ask if they can come take a class at our house all the time. And we're like, we have one wheel and a 75-pound dog. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. So talk about that kind of transition.
I think once I had really good basic technique, once I was a solid advanced beginner potter, taking on new people that just wanted a one night just to experience pottery, like those like ladies' night out, was actually super good because it solidified what my hands were doing. And that made me more aware, more intentional, and I was able to build on that. It is wonderful, like consistent income. So in the beginning, when you haven't found the thing that you can make to bring in good money, teach, but teach people below your level and continue to learn and continue to get better. And so that for this season was phenomenal. And then we started watching a TV show. And okay, so I know I just told you this whole thing about I'm not looking at other people's work, except when I'm watching TV or like a movie. And then I'll be like, oh, look at that. The mug in like Lord of the Rings. I'm like, oh man, that is the coolest stuff. So
I went nuts watching Adele's concert on television. Because beautifully, beautifully minimalistic set, no, nothing. She didn't have outfit changes. It was her and the music, and that was it. Except for the stool next to her that had a mug on it, because she was drinking tea the whole time. And I was like, how do I get our mug on that stool? Because that is a shit.
See?
It was a shitty, like mass-produced, probably picked up from Target that day mug. And I was like, all right, come on.
See? Okay. Yes. Because as makers, as you, if you, anyway, yes. So we started watching this show. A lot of people now have heard of it. It's called Yellowstone. We started season one, episode one. And I think it was like, I don't know. But there's this mug that Kevin Costner uses. And I'll be honest, I grew up in the Dances with Wolves era. So Kevin Costner in cowboy clothes. Yeah. So
sign me up. Yes, please. Thank you very much. I was going to say bodyguard, but, you know, that's our age gap right there.
Okay.
Between okay. Dances with Wolves right. To bodyguard.
So he uses this mug. It's a simple mug. It was not branded or logoed, but it was like just a nice mug. And I happened to have a good clay color and a good glaze that matched. So I said to my husband, I'm like, we ought to see if anybody's making that mug. So I looked and I spent weeks scouring the internet, trying to figure out where this mug, who was making it, because it didn't look like a Target mug. It looked like a handmade mug. And I'm not going to make something that somebody else is making and selling, right? I couldn't find anything. I did find one mass-produced thing that was sold out, but it was manufactured. It wasn't handmade. So I said to Jay, I'm like, we could do this, and started making it, marketed it as a replica mug. So full transparency, this is a replica mug inspired by, and started an Etsy shop. At that time, I was still working with my friend from the pottery studio in that we had met there. And so we opened this Etsy shop together, selling this mug. She would make hers and put her initials on it. I would make my version of it, put my initials on it. And, you know, we just kind of, she sold her listings, I sold mine. And it took off. It was really, really great. And it ended up being exactly what needed to happen for, we all get better with repetition, but you can't just be buried under 1,000 mugs because you have to have, they got to go somewhere.
There's only so many handles you can pull in a day before you start pulling your hair out instead.
So it ended up being phenomenal practice in pulling cylinders and pulling handles. Everyone is individually formed. And, you know, it's like, what a great outlook. So we had the Etsy shop, I think, 2 years, and it grew and it did really well. And then we ended up kind of dissolving our business partnership. And for me, moving over to a standalone website had the most integrity because I wanted to start over just to honor our friendship and what we had built together on Etsy. So after we dissolved that partnership, I had more to learn. So I took a ceramic materials workshop class on learning how to make glaze because she had been doing all of our glaze making. So I was like, I have no idea how to make glaze. And thanks to Matt's class, the beginner class, now I do. And it was a really great stretch because I never felt smart in school. And to take that class and do it and understand it felt like a really like, man, I can do this. And then I took your photography class. Yeah, I think it was like I did the glazing class. And I did your photography class right in that same window.
I think you might have been finishing up ceramic. I feel like there was a little overlap, but then not completely.
Yeah.
Or something. I couldn't imagine doing both full time at the same time.
Well, I just did the beginner glaze class. So that, thankfully.
It's still a lot.
It was. But the Denton Mug train was rolling right along. So I needed to learn quickly how to glaze. So I changed clay bodies, learned how to mix my own glazes. Yeah, and learned how to take really great photos thanks to your class. And
just to be clear, in like a 6 month time, like basically.
Or 3 months.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was a lot. And yet I'm grateful.
Your girls were like out of the house.
The girls were in college. Yeah.
Okay. So, okay. Just checking.
No, they were in college and the timing was great. I would never be able to do the life I do right now if I still had kids at home. And that's okay. This is a really good season for me to grow a career because my other career has grown. I loved your photography class. It was phenomenal. I love taking pictures. I used to love photographing my kids and our animals and stuff. And so to learn how to photograph my work from a professional photographer was such a like, oh man, I was so excited to take your class.
Well, and seeing you put it together, this was the beautiful thing, because I think that was like the first cohort, right? Like you were in the very, you're an early adopter person in general, I think.
Yes, I was so, I mean, the timing was perfect.
But like you, that group, what I didn't even think of in writing it, but then saw it through that very first group, was when things really start clicking, is when that photo style matches your pottery style, right? And that's hard to do because like I can't even say that I have a pottery style yet for me personally, right? I know where Francesco and I are going with Caratera, but that's the two of us informed together. Like there's still shapes that he likes that I don't like and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to get to that point, but there was you and a few other people who like already had a pretty clear vision of their pots. So then to have that synchronicity between the styling of the photos and the pots really just bring things to that next place, especially when you pulled out the saddle that you had as a kid and then your mug is on the saddle. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is like marketing gold right here in terms of telling your story.
Yes.
And selling a mug.
Yeah, it felt so authentic and it still does. It feels very authentic to me. And I think one of the neatest things is on my website, I reference it where I'm the middle of five. And so growing up, I had two older sisters, I had two younger siblings, and we were all scrappy. We were all trying to, we weren't always kind to each other. We were all trying to figure out where we fit in. And as kind of once I got married and had kids, I was like, oh, I fit in here. This is where I belong. I feel joy. This is all the things. And then as my girls were growing up through their teen years into college. And, you know, like I raised them not so they would stay home and we'd keep them in the basement, but we'd, you know, like they would.
Then you wouldn't have your studio. So.
Exactly. You know, but we raised them to be independent women. And so it goes against everything as a mom. You're like, oh, and yet if you're doing your job well, you've launched independent kids and they're phenomenal. I love my girls. I'm so proud of them. And yet in that, too, it was like as they're growing up, I was learning to grow in my own voice of creativity and this journey of finding me and what does Connie bring has been really meaningful, because I was so good at cheering for everybody else and saving everybody else's bags of dried out clay that to be able to say what I have to offer is needed and valued. And even if it's not needed, I'm compelled to make, which goes back to like the name. When I was trying to figure out what to name my business, I just mulled it over for the longest time and waiting for what felt like authentic words. And 2 cents came to the surface of when somebody's having a conversation and you're listening to it and you have something to say, you insert your 2 cents into the conversation, whether it's asked for or not. And I was like, for so long, I have been saying, well, what value do I have? What do I have to say? And with clay, I was like, I cannot not make. And so too bad if you don't want to hear from me. I am speaking into the world of clay because I am compelled to speak. I'm compelled to make. And then there's this Bible story, which is like the other side of the pendulum, where this widow is compelled to give her 2 coins as an offering. And so over here on the other side of the room are all these guys like shaking their bags of money and making a big deal about all that they're doing. And look at me, look at my great big contribution. And she's over here quietly giving her 2 coins. And Jesus says, check her out. That's what you should be like. And so in this age of social media and growing a business, there's so many people who are like, shake, shake, shake. Look at all my, look at what I'm doing. And so as 2 cents ceramics, what I do, I want to do it quietly. I want to do it from the heart. And the people that connect with me are the ones that need to connect with me. I don't need to connect with everybody, but I'm connecting in a really, you know, whatever my hands are making, I'm connecting with somebody else's hands. And it's so meaningful to be able to do that.
I love that you brought up that second meaning, because I think what's also especially powerful about what you're doing is like the approach that you're bringing to the business, which, like, in case anybody missed my joke about in 6 months and you said in 3 months, like, this was not a long-term plan of when the kids are out of the house, this is what I'm going to do and I'm going to slowly prepare to get there. This was like trial by fire. All of a sudden, Connie is in production mode.
Just to clarify.
Yeah, it's true, because the Yellowstone show took off and it's fascinating because the guy uses that mug like season 1, episode 1, all the way through to the final season. We're waiting on whatever's next to come out. But the mug survives through like 5 seasons. And a lot of characters don't survive. But that mug survives.
It killed off a lot of humans, but the mugs stay.
You know, every time we're like, well, surely they're going to be marketing it somewhere. Surely it'll show up in the shop to show or whatever. And it hasn't. And it's fascinating that whenever the character uses that mug, even though there's a lot of chaos, there's a lot of stuff happening, whenever he's holding that mug, it's a moment of quiet. It's a moment of peace. And I feel like people are connecting with that. It's fascinating watching that one item, people gravitate it. And hopefully it's bringing them their own moment of quiet and their own moment of peace in the chaos, in the crazy, like, sit and drink your coffee. And it's been a phenomenal gateway. We'll call it the gateway drug to my other stuff, because it's allowed people to get my work in their hands. And they're like, man, this thing is comfortable. It's well made. We love it. I love the feel. I love the thumb tab. I love the this. And now they're buying more. And it's allowed me to just be like, this is what my hands make. Do you like it? If you do, how about a bowl?
There's also these. Yeah. Well, and that's the part for me that, you know, to say that you enjoy doing, making what you make well and making it quietly, because like, yes, you're on Instagram and yes, you're like thoughtful about that, but you're not stressed. I've never seen you stress out about it. Maybe you're just hiding it well, but like, I've never seen you come into the community, for example, being like, okay, I feel like I should be making reels. What should I do? Does anybody have any resources? You're just like, I'm just gonna keep on keeping on. And that consistency, time and again, proves to work,
mm-hmm.
clearly. Your business model. I think it will come as a relief to many people to realize, I think we just celebrated, you had shared, you like hit 1,000 followers. Was that like,
oh yeah,
numbers don't matter. But like, we were celebrating that.
Right.
Because it's just a marker, right? And so it's like a moment to be like, oh wow, look at this. But at the same time, prior to 1,000, you've been selling out of Dutton mugs. I mean, it's not like you're making 10 a month. Like, you're good to go on your contribution to the household bills at this point, I think.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the part where you had asked about teaching. Teaching takes up so much time.
I've been talking about this new course for like a year, and now people will understand, like, that's why it takes so much time, like, to put together a thoughtfully designed experience so that what you learn first makes sense to what you're learning second, makes sense to what you're learning third. A lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot of creativity. Yeah. It's a lot of intentional thought. It's putting words to your thought. There's so much to it. And I think it's okay to realize it's okay to do things in seasons. So teaching was phenomenal for a season. And then the demand for my work picked up. And so it was okay to press into that. And I switched to making full time and have been doing it for a couple years now. It's so fun when our tax guy was able to see what I contributed. Oh my word. It was really cool. And I love at this season of life to really be able to contribute. We've paid for both our kids got married in the last 12 months. My pottery income paid for that.
Which, knowing what I know about weddings, is wild. Just to, like, that is some serious contribution. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, they had very reasonable weddings, but it was, you know, like, to be able to do that. Our kids' college, their girls were able to graduate both debt-free. So it's just stuff like that, and to be able to help set them up for success. But things that my hands are doing and finding, like, my mom and dad were entrepreneurs. They were self-employed. So to kind of go way back, we grew up with a self-employed model. They raised flowers. It was seasonal. It was cyclical. Ceramics is very cyclical, and it tends to be seasonal, but you have to continue to plan for the next upcoming season. And once you get in that routine, it's really a great business model. You just kind of have to have faith that as you're in the lower seasons, that keep making. So I very much have been modeled, work hard so then you can play hard. And I love working. I love showing up to work. I work, like I said, I work harder for myself than I do for, well, I mean, I would work hard for somebody else, but.
I was going to say, you and I have a hard time turning it off.
Yeah.
Like, it's really easy to get into it too much and be like, oh, wait, actually, I need to go take a break. Or, yeah, you know, the sun is finally out. Let me go be outside and put my hands in a different kind of mud for a little while to like refill that cup, so to speak.
Yeah, I work 4 days a week and intentionally take 2 days off because we recharge our phones. If they start to get down to like 20%, we panic. And yet why we think we shouldn't recharge ourselves, mm-hmm. You know, this whole mentality of if you're down to 8%, if yourself, you should keep going. Like, no.
Yeah.
It's okay to recharge.
The 20% is such an accurate, like, I don't know if you intentionally chose that number, but it's probably just an example of how much our phone, alluding to our phones, is ingrained into our psyche, because that little alert comes up
right
on your phone at 20% and you're like, okay, well, I'm fine now. You know, then you get used to it. So then you let it go to the 10% alert and then you're like, okay, now I do have to plug it in.
Yeah, so staying intentional with, especially as the creativity, the demand has gone up, being intentional about taking time to step away has been helpful.
That's a really good point that I also wanted to get to, because you and I have talked off recording a couple of times about both of us appreciating having that kind of singular object that gives you some stability. Both of ours happen to be mugs. Mm-hmm. Shocker to no one, you know, but truly the same mug that we're producing over and over again, that we enjoy to have that business stability. At the same time, we could easily slip into only ever making that and losing the love and the passion and the creativity and the enjoyment of what we're doing. So what do you do to kind of balance that?
It's a great question. For one, I'm grateful to have something that will consistently sell. And it's the best practice. Pulling handles on a regular basis is the best thing you could do for yourself. Throwing cylinders is a foundation for everything. I think everybody should embrace mugs. They sell. So don't hate on mugs. Make mugs and sell them. But then somebody within the community said, before they throw for anybody else, they throw a couple of things for themselves. And I love that. I don't remember who it was.
I was just trying to think it up. Keep going. Yeah. I'm going to remember.
And you could look it up. But I just thought, what a healthy warm up. So spend a little time. And I started doing that. Like in the beginning, I like throwing bowls. The strong arm makes it so nice to center large amounts of clay. And so I'll make some big mixing bowls just for fun and then go into production mode. But I think that's been a really, and I loved that that was talked about because we talk a lot about burnout. We talk a lot about, you know, what do you do when you feel like you are afraid you've lost that creative drive? We've talked about that in there. We've talked about the comparison game. I think I love that so much about the community now that I am a full-time potter. Just recently, we're talking about imposter syndrome. And coming up through the pottery journey, I've kind of gets drilled into you not to call yourself a potter until you've thrown like 100,000 pots or, you know, whatever. You know, at what point can you just step in and say, this is what I do? Maybe it doesn't need a name, but it's just, I don't know. So it was fascinating. Just some of the conversations I enjoy deeply within that group. It's not a group that's like, oh, what glaze color are you using? Nobody ever asks.
That was my other greatest fear. My two greatest fears were people giving advice or honestly, mansplaining. And also it being like a, hey, mom, look what I made in school today. You know, like, here's the pot that came out. And there's not like, what clay did you use? And they could ask that now. And that's totally fine. I'm not saying it's bad. We need those spaces also. But for me, that's like the only thing that exists on Facebook is like a, here's this, period. Like, that's not a conversation. That doesn't build a relationship. That doesn't.
No. Or somebody wants to know exactly what two glazes you layered at what temperature to get that effect. Like they want to know, they want to take whatever somebody else has made and replicate it. And I feel like the only thing the community is replicating is support so people can continue their own creative journey. And that's pretty awesome.
Speaking of which, one of the things people get access to in there is, this isn't going to keep being about the community, this is questions. Because one of the things people get access to in the community is to know who I'm recording with. And it's been a little funny because Connie got to see the questions ahead of time being in there, as opposed to this being a surprise. But I want to make sure we don't lose track of them either. So I'm just going to go down the list. This is just going to be like quick fire. Maybe I should create a new section in interviews and be like the quick fire portion. We'll create a little jingle and add music or something. I don't know. That's way higher production value than we have here, guys. Let's not set the bar there. All right. So Bill was admiring, and this is very much a smooth segue because we were talking about production and having this discipline for making and producing inventory. So he is curious about how you handle that daily workload and balancing, you know, time between working on the business and working in the business.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the biggest thing is I show up. My commute is down the steps from upstairs to downstairs. And just showing up. So I throw Sunday, Monday, I'll put handles on. I'll throw again Tuesday, Wednesday, I'll put handles on. And I'm usually throwing about up to 48 pot or mugs on a day. Right now I'm working on a big custom order. So that is kind of where all my energy is going. My website, I have a set item list of things that I sell and I just restock. So Etsy was good for teaching me that instead of doing one of a kind and photographing them and putting the listing up, it's just so time consuming. So to actually do a set number of items and duplicate or replicate them has been really helpful. So I have an inventory making list and I'll work through that and then just restock the website. So I just show up. I have my orders that I'll print and ship, and I've got a great shipping system. I don't know if that answers the question.
what I'm hearing in that is the cyclical nature that you alluded to with your parents' business previously, and that that is something it's some people look at that and think, oh, that sounds boring. And others of us are like, enjoy that repetition and that cyclical nature because it kind of gives you like a, I'm using my hands and nobody can see me. I don't know, not guardrails per se, but just a roadmap, I guess, would be the.
Yeah. In order to have a business that's successful, you have to continue to show up and work the business. So that's part of it is, I mean, having an item that sells out regularly is wonderful because it, A, keeps you working, which makes you better and better and better. Yeah. So I could take a week off, but I don't want to till the weather gets better.
There it is.
Yeah. And my stock list is big enough now that I need to work 4 days a week making between the glazing, and we just bought another kiln. So now I have a full kiln that's dedicated just for bisqueware and then a full glazing kiln. And it's a lot for one person. And yet I love the challenge. I love the strategy of it. I love kind of how to tackle this giant task and get it into manageable pieces. And it's all the things my temperament just loves and thrives in.
When you say working for 4 days, are you using another day outside of that then for the kind of admin business computer type stuff? Or are you just kind of fitting that in the 4 days you're in the studio and then able to like keep yourself healthy by having a, you know, not an insane schedule 5 or 6 days a week?
Yeah, I put in really long days. So I usually start about 8:30 and we'll go till 6:30. I work maybe it's more like 5 days a week. So 4.5, we'll say 4.5 days a week. By Friday afternoon is when I'll work on computer stuff. So ideally the front end of the week is loaded with all of the making, and then that's in a drying process. And so I can transition to prepping for the bisque or going into glazing. So first half of the week is all making. Second half of the week is the non-making stuff, glazing. Shipping happens every day. And yeah, and then it starts over. But I know my clay really well now. We have hung out a lot. So I only use one clay body and I only have 4 glazes. So keeping it simple has helped a ton.
I think that's actually crucial, is an underestimated importance. One, for working by yourself, like as a solopreneur, but also in a home studio, if you have a tiny amount of space like we do. I underestimated how important that was, having come from a community studio into a home studio that you're trying to make into a production studio for a full-time business. Like it's huge. It's a huge shift because we underestimate how much time it takes to like clean everything down before you switch clay bodies and have 2 different reclaim buckets and have 2 different spaces to have plaster bats that have different color reclaim and
Yeah, no. And down to glazes, I just finally added a new color to the offerings, but it was after a whole year of thinking and testing. I came from a studio that had like 12 buckets of options, and glazing was always super stressful because there's a lot of combinations. And so for me, it was really important to simplify, have the ones that work, have the ones that blend well, and take away a lot of those options that suck energy and just have what works. And it's helped to streamline the process.
I would wager a bet it also has helped with sales, because I think there's a bit of a misnomer that a lot of people think I need to have more options to make more sales, when actually decision fatigue is very real. And sometimes people need less options because then they will make a decision and will make a purchase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it gives you time to really hone in, and of your things that you are making, make them well. Like, it's not just about making stuff to make it, but like what we're making for somebody else's hands. And it's important, as we are in kind of this pendulum switch from mass produced machine made things to pottery becoming more popular, I think we're living in an age where we connect with screens, we don't connect as people as much. And so to connect with something that we're making by hand with somebody else's hands is really, I take that. Like, I think we take that very seriously to do it well. So for you guys with the giant mug.
Yeah.
I made sure I had it at my desk.
I love it. It's beautiful. But the thing I love about that mug, yeah, it's big.
It looks like a normal mug.
It's well made. And that's the part that for Francesco, what he's putting out there, they're going to get the best made giant mug. And you're pitting them. There's a lot of other giant mugs out there, but there's not a leather. They're not well-made ones. And so I love that there's room. There's room for makers to find a place for their voice to be heard.
That's been something you've said frequently in community discussion is like, it's a gem to find that one thing that kicks off for you. Maybe it is a mug. Maybe it's, I mean, I know like Shanine is making, per your suggestion, the snifters. Because it was like there's, you know, something that everybody else isn't making. Yeah. Okay, everybody else is making mugs. They're not necessarily 24-ounce steins, or they're not, you know, replicas of a specific look. But finding that one item that can just kind of help just kick things off and bring an audience to you that then can grow into the other things that maybe you're more excited about or maybe you're, you know.
Yeah, I think we've said it before, was like, whatever isn't being made or isn't being made well, there's room there. There's room to either start making it or start making it better and offer better.
I forget who said it, but there's like a business guru, somebody quote that was like, you either have to be the first, the only, or the best. Mm-hmm. Like those are the three options. And that's what you're talking about in terms of like if maybe something already exists, but if it's not made well or to a certain craftsmanship, there's still a space for people there. Mm-hmm. Well, sharing your schedule for the week answered Kat's question about your production schedule. Everybody knows you're like a production powerhouse. But Kim was asking because she just recently joined and hasn't chatted with you as much. So this might be fresher than my assumptions. She was asking about she noticed the quote on your website that was saying, creating is not a hobby, it's a way of life. And was interested in hearing you talk more about that and why you feel that way. Maybe we've touched upon that throughout this whole conversation, but I just wanted to read it verbatim in case you had other thoughts.
That's cool. Yeah, when I put my website together, that it's become how I live now. And I've been mulling over, like, what is it about clay or just is it any kind of art? And maybe it is. Maybe it's just the importance of making creativity a way of life. We have to fight for it because there is this assault on creativity. Little kids are happy to scribble on a wall and we're all like, oh, it's the greatest scribble, whatever. And yet as we get older, we just get smaller and smaller until we starve off that innate desire to be creative. And so I think taking creativity into having it just be something that everybody does is so important, that it's not just a hobby. And it doesn't have to be clay. It can be anything. It can be cooking or, you know, I don't care. Just do something with your hands. Do something. Allow yourself to get messy and do something. Like, what is it? Miss Frizz from the Magic School Bus, right?
Oh my God, I love that reference.
Right, because we live in this sanitized, we watch potters and people will watch you on Instagram and spend hours consuming content. But if we spent hours actually investing in creativity, oh my word, how many things would be like, how much of a better community would we be?
And our mental health. Honestly, for me, like, you know, to actually have, whether I produce something or not, I mean, this was the thing, the reason that I got into pottery in the first place, or re-into it, I should say, was because photography, I had to produce. I couldn't really take risks. I could
within a certain little window, but not really, right? Like, a contract was signed, money was given, people wanted good photos. And so if I was interested in creating something new, that wasn't really the space for it anymore. Whereas with pottery, and also because it's so tactile, I didn't care if I took anything off the wheel and fired it to completion or not. You know, like, I've always been perfectly happy slicing things. I mean, you guys have noticed even in the community how little I actually completely make. It doesn't mean I'm not practicing the skill, but I'm just not bothered by whether it's not my thing that I have to finish, mm-hmm. I guess. You know, that just that act of getting better at a skill.
Yeah.
Is what it is for me, I guess.
I talked to some local college kids who are taking a ceramics class at their university. And the one girl, she's like, my anxiety just disappears. She said, while my hands are in clay, I'm not thinking about anything else. And it was so neat to hear someone, you know, in their late teens, early 20s, talk about what they feel when they're touching clay. And I think this is where, as a ceramics community, yes, I'm making full time, but I also feel really compelled to have classes again. And for me, I'm doing 6-week classes and then I cycle them out and make room for new people, because I think we have to, it's almost like we have an obligation to create space for people to now touch something for real, not just be on an app making something fake, you know, or whatever.
Or admiring the spinning of the wheel from the, yeah.
Yes. Or watching a TikTok video of somebody making pottery. Like, as makers, I feel like we have to continue to create space and invite people in to partner and feel what we're feeling and do what we're doing.
I'm going to make you, this is a beautiful segue that you didn't know about, because the last question that we had was from Amy. And we've talked a little bit about your shift away from teaching into more making. And I know Amy's running her own community space and teaching, but I think we thought of it as like you were getting out of it. And what you just mentioned was actually kind of like, it's still a part of what you find important, but doing it in a kind of constrained timeline, or I'm making assumptions. I'm going to let you tell us, how does it actually balance with your production schedule and all of these things?
Yeah, it's a great question, and one that I'm still trying to find my own personal balance on, because I want to give 100% to what I'm making for my website and 100% to anybody that comes through the studio. And so it's continuing to figure out how can I do that well for everybody involved? And so that's been me learning. This is how many students I can handle at a shot. Limiting, having like a start and an end date is helpful. So that way I can continue to grow my own business, because that's important as well. But part of that is also not just being a hoarder of the really awesome thing that I've found and has been good for my own soul, but to open up this space and allow it to be a blessing to others as well. It's that, like, protecting it, but not hoarding it, and finding that balance in having people come in and learn to fall in love with clay. I don't have to be their, like, end. They don't have to, like, stay here for life. But if I can at least introduce somebody to clay, great. And if they love it, there's a community studio in Chattanooga or whatever. Like, but for me, just allowing this space to not just stay a blessing for me, but to allow it to be a blessing for some other people as well.
I imagine that transition is going to be a lot of upfront communication to be like, hey, this is intended for you to come in and get a taste. Here are the other resources. I don't have the capacity, but if you fall in love with it the way I do, here's the other resources. I'm not, you know, you're not going to be high and dry, but you know, you can't keep coming back here.
Yeah. And it's hard, because I'm a people, like, I would love to move in, you know, come on in, because I love it so much. And so, but being realistic about this takes a lot of time, what I'm doing to continue to grow my own business. And that's a great thing. Like, that's an awesome thing. But then also setting healthy boundaries is a learning curve. And we talk about that in the community as well. Not to
Actually, that's the thing that you guys help me the most with. Let's be very transparent about that. We do talk about it for ourselves, but you all are like, yeah, Rebecca, go take a break. We don't need that. We don't need that thing you said you were going to do, that PDF you were going to put together, or that, I don't know, event login or whatever it is. Like, it can be tomorrow. Go play.
Yeah. And I think that's what's really neat, because you have so many people that get it. We love what we do, and we don't want to burn out. You know, in January, the conversations on burnout are really authentic. And then as we cycle through the year, how do we intentionally go into the holiday season and protect the next January? And so it's nice to be able to have those conversations with people that are doing it as well. And I value that a lot, because it's helping me be healthier as a maker, because I want to do this for life, like for the rest of my, you know, functioning years. I love this. And to be able to talk to other people who love it as much as I do, it's so great on helping us all stay healthy so we can all keep it up.
Yes. Which I, number one, speaking of boundaries, am aware that we could talk for 8 hours. And so I'm going to attempt to try and wrap us up so that you can go spend time with whatever else, whether it's in the studio today or with that husband of yours or the chickens or I don't know where. I saw the cat walking through being like, are you done yet? Oh, hello.
Things that are really important to me now is remembering to allow my journey to be my journey. This was something we talked about earlier today within the community. It was kind of that imposter syndrome. And as makers, you know, here I am now. I have a really successful business. I'm not in art school. You know, I'm started at 40 something, you know, and invested a ton of time into building this career. I'm intentional. I put in a lot of hours, a lot of work. Like, I've worked hard to get here. And yet there's still like, oh, you know, I'm not as good as da 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 da. And how that steals you being present with your own journey. And sometimes I don't want to share all the successes because I don't want anybody else to feel bad. And I think one of the things that was really valuable that we talked about today within the community was being present with where you are in your own journey and not comparing yourself to anybody else's journey. I think about all the clay analogies. Just stay stuck to the wheel. Like, stick to the wheel and be present with the shaping that's happening. And I think when we stare at everybody else and compare our journey to their journey, it stops our own creative process. It steals our own being present. And so it was just a really good reminder, especially kind of on a podcast and you hear somebody and you're like, oh my word, they made it. That's great. Oh, why aren't I making it? And it's not about making it, it's about making. And so I would just say, make, be present with what your hands are doing, with what your heart loves, and you're going to find the people to connect with, because the world needs all of us. We're all fingerprints and we're all unique and it's needed. If we each press into what we're making, it's phenomenal the different people we can connect with. Like, not everybody needs exactly the same thing. And nobody can do all of it. So I don't know. That was just like my rambling, what we were thinking about from earlier today.
I think it's a beautiful note at the end to just leave it there. My brain keeps going in a million different directions per the usual to like add to. But that's just, that sums it up. And also for me, sums up like so much of the energy you bring to our group to just, I always struggle with this description to like put words into feelings, which is why we're visual people.
We are visual. I love the visual analogies. And yeah, I don't think we have to, I guess, as far as community pitch, I would say if you're looking for a place that has authentic transparency in people that love clay, come on over, check it out. If that's not for you, that's okay. We don't need everybody.
Actually, Bill was talking, you know, for people having heard me belabor the community over and over again, I was sharing with Bill earlier today, my goal is never to have it be thousands of people, mm-hmm. right? There's plenty of spaces on the internet where you can go be one in thousands. And some of those have very valid, you know, that having that size brings something else to the table, brings something totally different. I think about my experience at in-person conferences that were like 200 people, where it was enough that you had, number one, diverse voices, first and foremost, but also number two, kind of little pockets of people, right? Like I think about Rhiannon, who's logging in from Australia and wanting to bring, like, I want to bring more people from Australia so that she can like have her own co-working sessions at a reasonable hour of the day rather than the co-working sessions that Yvonne's starting in Austria or you're starting in Tennessee. So having enough people where you can have those little groups that band together in a way that's like, oh, here's like conversations for full-timers or part-timers or side hustlers that maybe you don't get when it's 30 people, but also not having it be too much bigger than that because it loses its intimacy and it loses its like, how well can you really get to know each other and feel safe and feel seen? And so that's always that, as absolutely thrilling and mind-boggling as it was to wake up today and realize we had 100 people in there, it was also like, because that's just so exciting to see more people coming together. But I will also remain very conscientious of like not letting it get, you know, there's other places online that have thousands of people. It's just a different vibe.
I think it's that balance of us not wanting to be a hoarder and protect this space. And I think if you're a maker and you haven't found community, and you're lonely, and yet you are absolutely in love with what you do, then this is the type of place to come to. And that's what's fun is you've created not just a podcast where we can learn stories of makers from all walks of life, but then you, again, have created this space where we can come together from all walks of life and find we have so much in common. It's fantastic. And so in coming together with our commonalities and our struggles and our joys and our all of
kiln explosions.
Yeah. Yeah. We're able to get the, it's almost like you just get energy to go press back in to making, because making is hard and it's also worth it and it's also good. And so it's really, it's a special place.
Well, thank you for your time, for everything, frankly. You have been on this journey with me just as much. Actually, I mean, I think as much as any, you've experienced it with me as it's happened, quite literally, between the very first group of the photography styling course and the early adopter of the community. Like, it's just wild.
I'm so proud of you. I'm proud of what you've created. I'm proud to put my money behind what you've created. I think it's really important to do that too. You're fighting to create eye contact. So, this is another thing. It's like, we don't look at each other. We listen, but we don't like actually see. And so you have taken it from just listening to a call to see. And it's so beautiful. And I applaud you for starting something new. Wedding photography was phenomenal while it was there for a season. But now with you and Francesco, you have the ability to create something that's needed and necessary, and you bring such a unique gift set, your experience with business, what you bring to the ceramics community is such a gift and such a blessing. So thank you.
Aww. I'm just gonna make weird sounds that don't sound good on audio in response. So I'm gonna make you pitch yourself now because you're, so thank you. The appropriate thank you, period. And people cannot see me like downturn blushing. Please tell people where they can find you on the internet.
Oh, twocentsceramics.com. And I'm on Instagram under that same name. So
perfect.
Yeah.
We'll link it in the show notes. And also, if people don't know what I mean by show notes, I am redoing the website to have all the pages of all of the episodes. So makersplaybook.com/podcast, they'll find you there too. It's going to have a searchability in everything, like a real website.
proud of you to grow.
You know, that's the little things.
Oh, re-listening to Connie's beyond kind words still has me squirming in my seat over here. You couldn't see that on the recording, but maybe you could hear it. But maybe now you know a bit more about why I've been struggling for almost 2 years now, since we started the community, to come up with a brief elevator pitch to explain just how special I find this place online. And more importantly, I have to say, I don't know what I did right in the universe or with karma or whatever it is, but our core group of founding members is just something really stinking special. I might be the one to unlock the virtual door, flip on the light switch, and pay the electricity bill. But it's our members that have really taken this virtual home to the next level. Now, you've heard me ramble on enough about all of this at the beginning, so I'll just say for now, if you want to come check out whether or not this might be the right virtual home for you as well, then click on over to makersplaybook.com/community to learn more. Once again, this episode was made possible in part thanks to our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by the Rosenfield Collection of Functional Ceramic Art. The collection exists as an online source for research and inspiration, featuring photos of objects made by over 1,000 artists. The images are high quality and can be used with no permission required, making them a great source for students and teachers. To find out more, visit www.rosenfieldcollection.com. This episode is also sponsored by the Archie Bray Clay Business, home of Bray Patch, a ceramic patching material that is best used for filling cracks and bonding breaks. Bray Patch can be applied to either green or bisqueware and fired up to cone 10. It fires paper white, but can be tinted using your chosen clay body and be covered by opaque glazer slip. Order anytime, online at archiebrayclay.com. Audio post-production of this podcast is made possible by help from Christy Kotzfun, with promotional material assistance from Queenie Malachy. The Makers Playbook podcast is recorded on the original homelands of the Potawatomi, Ho-Chunk, and Menominee people, where the people of Wisconsin's sovereign Anishinaabe, Ho-Chunk, Menominee, Oneida, and Mohican nations remain present. Until next time, my friends, go get back to making your dreams a reality. Because together, we've got this.
This podcast is a production of the Brickyard Network, an extension of the Archie Bray Foundation for the Ceramic Arts. To find out more about our lineup of ceramic podcasts, visit brickyardnetwork.org.